fucking words I'm trying to get out my head. Plug in the mic and leave nothing unsaid. Now sit back, relax, and listen to some real talk.
Now sit back, relax, and listen to some real talk.
You are now listening to Unspoken Words Podcast.
Hey,
yeah!
Should have took it when
spoken
I had the chance.
Words.
Episode 183, a powerful message indicating that you are on the right path to achieving your goals and fulfilling your life purposes.
Fulfillment. Who can lie me? Fulfillment. Who can lie me?
Fulfillment.
That's what you get for that one.
183?
Yes, 183.
183 weeks in a row.
Just for you, our listeners, because you're that important to us. Hey, this is Unspoken Words. And over here to my left, all the way from El Jesus, number 83 in a place to be. And he ain't even trying to preach it, Randy B. The pod god, he say, showed up.
Mahalo.
Mahalo from Algeria.
Mahalo all the way from Algeria.
And over Algerian mahalo.
And Algerian mahalo. And over here to my right, all the way from Bobwood, I know, it is your favorite Indian, your host. Your hoe in one.
Did you say ho?
Yeah, I said your hoe. You're number one hoe right here. Your hoe in one. Shooter JC McGavin, your favorite Indian. Say, show it up.
Oh, your favorite ho.
Your number one hoe.
Damn. Hey, what's up? Yeah, shoot.
My bad, yo. Hey, and joining us on Teams tonight, all the way from Idaho, right?
Idaho.
Yeah. No, JC Idaho.
Apparently so.
We got Mary Jane Oatman, and we're going to get into her story a little bit later, but she's joining us via Teams tonight. Special guests in the house virtually. Very honored to have you tonight. Say what's up.
What's up? Hey, it's an honor.
Right on. Hey, and you know me, Mo Hugs Not Drugs, all the way from up the road in Arrow Creek. Hey! I feel like a hero.
I feel like a who.
Messed him up, man.
Right, I was even trying to. Man, got tongue twisted. Everything was, I was just.
That's okay. It's all fun.
I've been going Bobwood 9-0 like all week, man.
Yeah.
For real, man. So it's like, tongue twisted too at the end here. How's your guys' week going?
It's going. At least it's warming up.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, it gets hot in work, but that's just part of it.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah, I've been a little under the weather, man. I actually just went back to work today.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
Man, laid up?
Yeah, just sick.
Oh, yeah.
I caught a cold and...
Sick of it all.
Yeah, I woke up yesterday, no voice.
Right, all stressed out from running that power.
No, I don't think so. I think it just, I don't know.
No voice from those.
Well, Saturday there was a boxing match in town, and man, it was like real hot in there because it was packed. Yeah. And then that air was like cold.
Oh, yeah.
But I woke up kind of funky on Monday.
Yeah.
And then even worse on Tuesday.
Dang.
So I went home. I left home. I left work.
Left home.
I left work on Tuesday, and
I know, man. I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're feeling better. Definitely.
Glad you have your voice back.
Yep. Uh-huh.
From the diaphragm.
From the diaphragm. That's why I ran out of breath there.
Out of practice.
I'm just kidding. Yeah, no, not an excuse. I don't know why.
Right on. Mary Jane, how's your week going?
It's been going pretty good. It's been a busy one. We had the big advocacy week last week in Washington, D.C., so it's a lot of follow up from the Farm Bill Coalition work that we were doing out there.
Right on, right on. I really like that picture. You're standing there with your hat on.
In front of the Capitol?
Yeah. That was really cool. I was going to ask you if that's cool. We'll use it for our graphic tonight. For our social media posts. All right, right on. Cool. I just wanted to get that permission.
Wrong building. That was in front of the White House.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can kind of see on the ground, there's a bunch of candles there. The Last Prisoner Project, one of our partners, they had a display of candles representing every single person that's still incarcerated for cannabis, including many people that are incarcerated now for life sentences over cannabis.
Dang, for real?
Damn.
That's crazy. I'm glad you guys were out there doing that and remembering those people. That's good, especially in today's climate.
Exactly. Wow. Nobody should be in jail while a certain percentage of our population is out there, disproportionately, predominantly white male men making millions of dollars in this industry.
For real. Definitely. Yeah, we'll get into that a little bit more in a few. But at this time, I'm going to throw it over here to your favorite Indian. He has some Rez Kid Mad Libs. Is that what you call it?
Rez Kid Mad Libs. So, Mary Jane, you know what a Mad Lib is, right? Have you heard of those?
I do.
All right, good. No explanation needed. So, let me kind of forget.
Tell me. No,
I'm just kidding. So, I'm going to ask you some stuff, and then you have to tell me some other stuff.
Okay.
All right. We shall go around the horn, and then, I'm getting old. I got cataracts. I need some for my glaucoma.
She's got the medicine.
That's what I said. Yeah, that was the
hint, right?
Okay. We'll start with Josiah, Randy, then Mary Jane. Mind if I call you MJ?
Call me MJ.
All right, because MJ's the GOAT, you know.
That's right. 23.
All right, so Josiah, starting with you, I need a description word. Description, like a
slappy.
That you're gonna say rugged.
Your shorts.
what exactly is slappy? Okay, anyway, moving along.
Yeah,
Randy, give me a body part.
Arm.
Okay, Mary Jane, MJ, give me something you would yell on a carnival ride.
Wee!
All right, Josiah, I need a sound.
Like a sound of something?
Yeah, just give me a sound.
Ba-rump-a-dum-dum.
Ba-rump-a-dum-dum. I'm not sure how to spell that, but we're going to try.
Yeah.
I already blew it.
Is that what's that Christmas song called?
The Little Drummer Boy?
Yeah, Little Drummer Boy.
Okay. Randy, we need an animal.
A cow.
But you say me.
MJ, we need a verb. Action word.
Yeah. Kicking.
Kicking woman.
Kicking cow. Yeah. All right. We need a noun.
Oh, a noun for me?
Yes, sir.
Tomahawk.
Tommy Hawk.
A person, place, or thing. I was like, what's a noun again? I feel like I ask that every time.
So, Randy, we need another verb.
Screaming. Kicking and screaming. Oh,
yeah. Okay, MJ, another verb. Don't Don't
jumping.
Don't be afraid to think outside the box, but we'll take jumping.
Yeah. In the box,
Phil.
In the box.
In the box. All right. Mo hugs, not drugs. We need a dance move.
Oh, man. Seawalk.
Seawalk.
Yeah. These youngsters don't know.
Okay, Randy B, we need a noun.
The rims.
Rims.
This is for the Bermans and the Cadillacs.
Okay, MJ, we need a adjective, description word, whatever slappy is.
Burnt.
What did you say?
Oh, I said burnt.
Oh, burnt?
Burnt.
Yeah.
Burnt out. Okay. We need a verb ending in ing.
Me?
Yes, sir.
Did you go?
Do I go? I already know what the thing is.
Oh, so okay.
It won't be as good.
ing, a verb. Fighting.
Fighting.
Wasn't that the one you got last time?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I always say
violence aunties. Begets violence.
Aunties. Okay, we need another adjective.
Laughing.
That's a verb.
Oh.
Description. Like a, something to. Oh. Something that describes a noun. Or, yeah.
Like what, playing?
Just a description word.
I don't know. Hold on.
Like disgusting.
Moving along.
Yeah, disgusting.
Okay.
I had to Google that real quick. Sorry, man.
That's all right, man. It happens to me every time. Yeah. Mine goes blank.
I was thinking about this earlier, and you know, no matter how many times we do this, I still have to write it down. Yeah. See, I got a cheat sheet on mine. I know what an adjective and a verb is because I wrote it down.
I had to Google there real quick.
Okay, MJ, give us a body part.
Belly button.
Belly button. All right. Couple more. We got about four more. Action word.
Action word. Let me see. Deadly?
I think that's more of a description.
Descriptive. Action. Action, action, action. Man, my mind's going blank.
Loving.
Love.
Yeah.
Love.
Love. Yeah.
Love. Hey, love is an action.
That's why I say love's an action word.
All right, Randy, we need another body part. Jeez.
Ear.
Ear. All right, MJ, give us an animal from the petting zoo.
The giraffe.
I've never seen a giraffe in a petting zoo, but okay.
I want to go to that petting zoo.
Last one, Joseph.
Petting zoo.
I was thinking more like, you know, bunnies or goats or something, but giraffe is good. We're going to go with that.
Hey, yeah. Yeah, I would like a giraffe at a petting zoo.
Yeah. Do you ever see like on those videos when they stick their head in the window and they got them big old long tongues?
Oh, yeah.
And they're like eating ice cream or whatever and they try to get it?
Yeah.
That's disgusting.
It is.
All right.
I bet you they give some wicked hickeys.
Some wicked wet willies.
Yeah, big old hickeys. That's it, man. So giraffe hickeys.
That's better than the jaguar.
Yeah, that's more powerful than the jaguar hickeys.
Okay, well, last one. Action. An action word.
Another action. Yes. Let's see. Man, my mind's going blank again. Action, action. Talking.
Talking. Cut out?
Kung Fu fighting.
Yeah.
Oops. Oh, did she? Getting a phone call. That's what happened last time, remember?
Okay, so.
Oh, she got it. Okay.
No, he did.
Oh, yeah, mine. Yeah.
Okay, so I filled in the blanks, and we'll see what you guys came up with.
All right, let's go. Let's do this.
Here is your reservation Mad Lib from Josiah, Randy, and MJ. Excuse me. Pardon me. It was a slappy and stormy night, and Randy, JC, and Josiah were driving down a dark desert highway, cool wind in their arms. Suddenly, something ran out into the middle of the road. Josiah slammed on the brakes and screamed, "Wee!" They all heard a huge ba-rum-pa-bum-bum, and the car began to swerve back and forth. "Holy cow, we hit something," said Randy. "What the heck was that?" said JC. "I don't know, but we better kick it," said Josiah.
She even said,
"Can I kick it?"
They stopped the car and slowly turned around. When the headlights shone on the highway, they could see a furry tomahawk in the middle of the road. "Damn, what is that?" said JC. "Are we going to get out and scream at it?" asked Randy. "Yeah, we better. We should at least jump it off the road," said Josiah. The three of them slowly got out of the car and seawalked toward the furry tomahawk. As they got closer, Josiah said, "Whoa, what's that smell?" "It smells like rims," said Randy. "Wow, that thing is burnt," said JC. "Is it alive?" asked Randy. "Doesn't look like it's fighting," said Josiah, "so it must be dead." "So who's going to move it?" asked JC. "We all have to move it. It's too disgusting," said Josiah. "Damn it, I knew you were going to say that," said JC. The Unspoken Words crew all began to reach down to grab hold of the belly button in the road. Just as they were about to grab on, it loved them and jumped up on two legs.
Oh, hey, now.
It was a 7-foot-tall Sasquatch with huge hairy ears.
Oh,
ooh. And in perfect English, it screamed and took off running into the woods. Huh, I must have missed one. But by then, the three men had started to scramble back to their car, screaming like giraffes. "Go, go, go," yelled Randy. "Mm-hmm. "Don't look back. Just talk," screamed JC. "No one is going to believe us," said Josiah, "so we'll just keep it to ourselves." And that story has remained a secret until this day.
Uh-oh.
What did you guys think?
Brother Sasquatch.
Uh-oh. I remember that when we met Sasquatch.
Yetish. Uncle Yetish.
Grabbed it by the belly button and he loved you.
Crazy, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Those are always fun. I like those.
I know. We mistaken Sasquatch for Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Yet he never complained.
Oh.
I tried. I always try to sneak that one in there somehow, some way. But it's all good. Hey, you guys feeling warmed up? MJ, you feeling warmed up?
Super hot.
All right. Ready for the hot seat.
Hot flashes, though. Not there yet.
All right. Let's get into the main topic. So, DJ, if you're ready, why don't you hit me with that beat?
Yo, let's get into our topic. Yo, let's get into our topic.
All righty then.
Smoking.
All right, we're here in the main topic in episode 183, and we're with Mary Jane Oatman. And we're going to get into what she does, what she's working on, where she's been, all that. But we'd like to start at the beginning here. Why don't you tell us, like, where you grew up, who you grew up with, and just start there.
Well, I'm a little red kid from Idaho. I grew up on the Nez Perce Indian Reservation, and I am the second in a lineup of six kids, and all of my cousins on both sides of my family, both sets of grandparents, all same little res town here in Idaho. So I grew up Indian rich, you know, same, you know, stereotypical little, you know, res upbringing. Our family didn't have a lot of money, but we never went hungry. My dad was a one hell of a fisherman, a hunter, and we just, you know, weeded the garden all summer long just to be able to earn the right to go swim and kind of fun stuff. But grew up in the river and tubing the hills in the winter time, and we're salmon people. So that's always been a big part of my my family way of life since forever, since I was a baby girl, is fishing culture.
Right on. I love me some salmon.
Yeah.
Definitely. So as you're growing up, were you exposed to like any drugs and alcohol or just like addiction in general?
Oh yeah. I mean, I really feel like that's where I had all the flowers in the world to my mom. Even as a young teenage mom, she knew that she really wanted to break that cycle, you know, and so she tried to find ways to be a more present parent than her mother was afforded to be during the time that she was, you know, trying to figure out her life. And my mom really made sure that we were not exposed to a lot of what my cousins were being exposed to with the, you know, weekend parties on the res kind of a situation. And sometimes that was even happening at my grandparents' house. And so my, you know, my mom, she knew when to keep us home and keep us away from that type of exposure. But, you know, my dad, he battled with drinking quite a bit when I was a little girl too. And I've seen a lot of devastation with alcohol in my younger years. And then, that morphed in my later years into methamphetamines. And I think that that's really where I've seen probably, I mean, it's all taken so much, you know, from families and smart people, but, meth is one of those. I've seen moms come back and go and come back, you know, when it comes to alcohol and they try and they do the treatment. Meth is just one of those where I've seen complete families just severed and they don't come back. And so, yeah, that's been present here on my reservation. But because of, my mom was young, but she was mean, you know, and she would just talk a lot of real talk with us when we were just little kids, you know, not a talk, but a dialogue. And so I really feel like I'm blessed that she kept it real from such a young age and let us know, you know, choices and consequences, positive and negative. And, you know, you make these kind of choices that, you know, and she would point out people in our community, you know, that's the types of, you know, life that you'll have if you make those choices. And so, yeah, I mean, it was rough. I really see that's why I'm really lean into the work that I'm doing, because I saw cannabis as a plant medicine take my dad from a pathway away from alcoholism.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's so important to have those, that open dialogue, like you're talking about with the youth, just putting stuff on the table where, you know, a lot of times, like when I was growing up, like a lot of things were taboo. Like you didn't talk about a lot of things like that. It was just like, don't do that. And like, that was it. Like no instruction on, well, how do I not do that? You know, but sounds like, I mean, from what you're talking about your mom, you know, she really kept it real with you. Like, if you make this decision and then, like, really showing you the outcome, like, you're going to end up like this guy here on the street and stuff like that. So I admire that about your mom, because that's something that I shoot to do with my kids. You know, it's like an open dialogue. Like, we talking about, like drugs and how to treat people and alcohol. And like, those are constant conversations that are happening throughout the week with my kids. And like them seeing it on social media and stuff. So that's pretty good that you had that upbringing and a mom that was talking to you like that. So from there, like, did you have any battles with addiction or anything like that?
I haven't necessarily battled with any kind of substance abuse addictions. Okay. In my younger years, I think that there's, all different forms of addiction. Mm-hmm. And I think that growing up a young girl on the res, I dealt with an eating disorder that I think was kind of related to addiction to, food. And that was, something that was very impactful in my young years. But it was also, interestingly enough, during the same time frame where I knew that my body did not handle narcotics in the same way that other people maybe gravitated towards addictions. My sophomore year in high school, I had knee surgery, and I got violently sick from taking the hydrocodones that they were giving me. So wow. I dealt with pain, and I found ways to cope with pain management because of how sick I got from the pills that they gave me. And I'm 15 years old, my first experience with any kind of hardcore, pills like that. At that time, I had an experience with cannabis, and so I knew what my body could and could not handle, and I definitely stayed away from any kind of pills. And just really try to figure out through meditation how I could handle pain management. But that was also around that same time when I am 15 years old having a complete ACL reconstruction. I'm like going through that almost year-long journey and being a young athlete that was – my whole world revolved around basketball. Mm-hmm. I mean, my entire world revolved around basketball. And then I was stuck where I couldn't work out. I couldn't run. I couldn't play ball. And psychologically, that started to, to mess with me and how I started calculating food intake and really becoming a little bit more obsessed with, what then I was thinking of as like my way of being able to control that I couldn't work out, but it really just morphed into an eating disorder over, the next year or two.
Oh, wow. So as you battled that, the eating disorder, what really helped you kind of realize that you had a problem and then started coming out of that?
It was my dad. My dad actually, I think that he was noticing the patterns of what was going on, and he sat me down and he told me that he struggled with the same thing when he was in high school. And I was bored for many different reasons. One, I was floored because I thought that it was my own dirty little secret. I didn't know that anybody else knew. And so to know that my dad knew, it was mortifying. It was embarrassing. But at the same time, because it was my dad, then I felt like finally, like this sense of weight was lifted off of me. And then I was just, I guess, because of how our culture and society talks about these things, I didn't know that men had those issues. I didn't know that was something that my male peers could potentially even be experiencing. Like, my dad opened my eyes up to a whole new world and realizing that men also deal with these same, social, emotional, and physical issues around body image. I grew up really, fast, just in that conversation about my own dad, and how he felt safe to tell me it, and that he loved me enough to tell me that I needed to stop, and what was, the potential of what was going to happen if I did not stop.
I'm glad you brought it up, because that's one of the things that we rarely ever think about is like an eating disorder, right? And You said that it has that almost the same kind of psychological impact and stuff, and of course it's damaging to your body. But I was just kind of surprised that, like, how many people I've known in the past who have said that, like, oh, I had an eating disorder at such and such time, And I'm like, you know, it's something that, you know, isn't really talked about, isn't really, I don't know, recognized even, or I guess addressed too.
I hadn't really talked about it even after, you know, talking with my dad. I didn't get any counseling, you know, there was, you know, no behavioral health component to it. It was just like, get your shit together, girl, you know, that's not healthy. And, you know, it was not to say that it wasn't something that, you know, incrementally impacted my life. But what really, I think, changed that trajectory was when I was carrying my son. So I'm like, you know, 22 years old and I'm pregnant, and it was no longer a struggle or a battle for me. But I guess just I grew into a new phase of my life and realizing just, you know, how beautiful women are, why women have the curves that they do and the battle scars, and, you know, why, you know, why Creator made us with the shape to be able to conform to give life like we do. And and from there, I became so hard on myself and realized that, you know, I will never have that Barbie doll image. And, you know, quite frankly, is it healthy for me to even want, you know, that kind of image? So from there, I changed my mindset about it and realizing that, and I started doing this while I was pregnant with my son at 22 years old. I was like, God damn, I want to be a great grandma someday. And I realized then, like, I do parts because I have like all of these genetic factors against me, environmental factors, you know, plus, you know, just there's, you got to put the work in. And so that was what I did in my early 20s. And why I kind of started adopting like a healthy, fit, you know, native active lifestyle was I made the goal then that I wanted to be a great grandmother that saw my children someday, or my great, great grandchildren, and got to hold them and have experiences with them, if, you know, Creator willing.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a great goal. I think that's a goal that we all have here.
Yeah.
No, that's pretty cool that you able just to change your mindset, because that's like what I had to do, you know, to come out of my addiction and that kind of like that pity party that I was constantly throwing. Like, I had to forget everything, like forget how I handled everything, and like relearn how to handle stuff, like with healthy coping skills, and like just change my mindset, change my direction, change my motive, like change like my trajectory by just changing my mindset. I think that's a powerful thing. Like, we're capable of so much on that aspect once like we realize like, oh crap, I'm not going down a good path, so I need to change some stuff up. But it all starts on the inside, definitely. So from there, like, you want to start talking about like how you got into the work you do now, like where did that journey begin? I know you mentioned a little bit of your dad. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah, with my dad, you know, it was just kind of natural for him to move in that direction, but it was, always a part of my life. I mean, my mom was a medicinal cannabis user while she was pregnant with me. So, I, you know, it's been a part of my life before I even had a choice, if you will. But my grandmother went to federal prison for growing marijuana on the Nez Perce Indian Reservation during the Reagan administration. So there was, you know, that, like kind of subculture that happened, you know, within my family and in our community when I was a little kid, where I knew it was how my mom and dad made money. I knew that it was medicine. I saw it work and heal as medicine. And then I actually had a time frame where when I was a little girl, I was really angry at the plant because I didn't have a normal lifestyle. I couldn't have my girlfriend's have a slumber party with me. And there was so many little things where I realized like I don't have that white picket fence white kid lifestyle, and to me at the time it was because of the plant. It wasn't just because, so now what I know with the land schism and the politics and the bureaucracy and what we know now, when I was a little kid it was just because, you know, my mom and dad smoked weed and they sold it. And yeah. I couldn't have a normal life because of it. But, you know, fast forward to, gosh, it was in 2015 when I heard about what happened at Menominee after the Farm Bill was passed. So we're talking like the USDA has legalized, you know, the Farm Bill through the Agricultural Improvement Act. And tribes are starting to figure out like, oh, we want to grow fiber. We want to learn, you know, more about the textile side of things. And our tribes and tribal colleges were getting raided. And that's when I realized that there's still a glaring disparity. There's organized efforts to keep our people out of these new industries. And I shifted gears and started doing for hemp and cannabis advocacy, learning more about what's happening in the industry. And that's when I realized that with a lot of this, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion, that the I in BIPOC is always silent. Like, where is our voice? They keep forgetting the indigenous voice in this movement. And one of the things that I found that was really reckless in that as the whole nation and the, even the world moves forward is that it's a very capitalistic approach that does not even talk about the reality that we have a responsibility to protect Mother Earth. If we're building a new industry that is known to be water intensive and potentially harmful to the environment, if done in a bad way, by bad actors that are only looking to rush something like the green rush, you know, like what our communities experience with the gold rush, that we have to speak up because nobody else is going to, especially not for, not for the land, not for the water.
Oh yeah, definitely. So as you started getting into this work and then into this, I guess this scene, what are some like major obstacles that you personally kind of felt or still battling today?
I would say the number one greatest obstacle is the reality that a lot of our people have lost any kind of pre-contact stories, relationship, or first story with the plant, either as a textile or as medicine. And then we have been the products of an 85-year-old PR campaign to demonize the plant and communities of color that had any relationship with it. So the stigma, number one is the stigma. Like even for progressive tribal councils that want to move forward to explore health and economic development with cannabis, if the elders in our communities still see this as a gateway drug or as another addiction in our community and don't see the medicinal benefits or see the clinical research that's being done or see that when we continue to ban it in our communities, that fosters illicit cannabis, that fosters black market cannabis and unsafe products in our communities. And so I think that the work that we have to do around educating our communities that safer access is better than continuing the war on the plant medicine.
Thank you for that. I know that, you know, for the past couple of years, like, and Josiah has too previously, but like working out on the streets, like, I had clients where I really, as a last resort, would encourage like harm reduction, to start using, what you call medicine. So I appreciate your insight, but what's one thing that your business, as you started out in your career, like what's one thing that you didn't expect? Is there something?
Oh,
it's the man.
It is, man. Oh, there she is.
Yeah, we had a glitch. Did you hear his question?
I just heard the, what's the one thing?
No, but I was saying like, thank you for your insight because, you know, like I worked out on the streets for a couple of years and I really, I don't want to say like I encourage, but as a last resort, like if a client was like dealing with.
Man, the question's too powerful.
What should I ask then?
Ask that one again. Just ask it again.
I think the question is too, but the question is like, what's one thing that your business did that you didn't expect? Like what's one thing that it's brought to you that you never expected?
Oh, Oh gosh. I think that the one of the things that it's brought that I didn't expect is outreach from a global Indigenous community. My focus has been so laser focused on getting tribes in the lower 48 and the Alaska Native and Native Hawaiian communities more organized around these efforts, but it's more outreach from First Nations communities wanting to work with the tribes here. You know, other Indigenous communities, Sangomas from South Africa, like other Indigenous communities that want this to be a very inclusive effort. And here I am just thinking of, you know, federal reform and descheduling and making sure that tribal sovereignty is protected when that state and federal reform happens. And I did not even think when we started this organization that global Indigenous communities would want to be a part of it.
And that's awesome. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going back to that, what you were talking about, 80 some odd years of demonizing and propaganda. And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but like from my understanding, when they realized that hemp was good for clothing and fiber and all that other stuff, paper, whatever, that the forest industry is the one that started that kind of whole thing. Because they started, you know, taking money out of their pockets. And then another aspect to that, too, is like calling it marijuana to associate it with people south of the border and have sort of an ethnic twist to it. Then, of course, I know you probably know all about Reefer Madness, that movie.
Yes.
So I was just curious as to, like, when people come up to you and I guess challenge you with all these myths and all these stigmatic things that, you know, are associated with the plant. What's your approach to that?
You know, it's really important for our work to remind folks that, yes, we did have a war on drugs, you know, that started with a very robust campaign. And you're right, the timber industry had a big part of that, but so did also the plastics industry. Mm. But prior to this happening to the plant through being scheduled as or being classified as a Schedule I drug under the Controlled Substance Act, is that, you know, our communities have an earlier impact of this criminality around smoking plants, and that, you know, in the late 1800s, our communities were enduring religious persecution, spiritual persecution. That's well documented. Mm-hmm. You know, they banned organized religion. Our chiefs were not allowed to counsel and smoke together. And many of our treaties have recordings and minutes that was a part of how we made our decisions, was we counseled together. They smoked and even denied the government smoke during these treaty councils. They went back and counseled with their wives about these decisions. And so there was a big cultural loss that happened around a smoking culture that was, you know, part of the direct warfare against our, I'm speaking specifically about like Plains and Pacific Plateau Treaty Indians, that mm-hmm. we weren't contacted by Lewis and Clark until 1805. So there's a different record for our people in this treaty era than, you know, what tribes out in the East Coast had. But a big portion of that was around why rights were restored under the American Indian Religious Freedom Act, was because of what happened to the schism of our religious or spiritual ways of life during the 1800s post-treaty, mid-war, Indian War conflict time frame.
Mm-hmm. So from your research, you've been able to identify that a lot of the Plains tribes did smoke weed, basically.
So So what I'm finding is that a lot of our tribal communities had a word for the specific plant that's different from maybe the dogbane or the other plant medicines. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think it's incumbent upon the tribes to reclaim what that history is themselves. Mm. I know what my own tribal's history is, and prehistory, some of the oral traditions. I've dug into some of the ethnobotanical records as well as some of the early census records where they talk about our people having a green smoking plant that's vastly different when dried than when wet. It's also different than the white man's tobacco. It's, you know, and so there's you know, the work that I do on my own, you know, Nimi Pu or Nez Perce story, and I never, ever want to be so reckless as to tell any other tribal's plant medicine story. So what I really seek to do is empower others to find what theirs are. But I mean, I've looked at other tribes, you know, treaty meeting minutes and some of their census records as well. And like I said, then there's the oral literature that comes with it as well, that, mm-hmm. that connects to, yes. Again, like I go back to, we had a relationship with smoking plants. Period. Mm-hmm. And whatever, like your proprietary blend would have been different than your brother's versus your brother, you know, on the right and the left of you. And what was in your medicine bag, you know, was your blend and nobody else's blend.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. yeah, I'm very interested now to do my own research for my own tribe and just kind of find out what that relationship was with the plants and what plants were like involved. Because I know we have a word in our language for the plant, it's obaje. But I wonder if I'm starting to think, like, is that more recent or has that always been, like, with our tribe in our language? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's very interesting. I've never thought of it like that. So making my wheels spin right now.
Yeah, I know.
Because, I mean, it makes you wonder, though, because, like, so much knowledge was lost, mm-hmm. right? And, like, you asked me, you know, what plant would be good for a burn or what plant would be good for an upset stomach? What plant would be good for a headache? What, like, I couldn't tell you. I don't know. Aspirin?
Eat that dandelion.
Eat that dandelion. That those dry dandelions are good for that. But you know, so like but yeah, so I mean, like, man, like, just so much knowledge was stolen. We'll just say that. We'll just call it what it is. Like, to me, like, all that stuff was stolen.
Yeah.
And I know there are indigenous people out there who still I don't know if they still retain the knowledge or if they went out and kind of relearned it. But I think, you know, like, then this is just one aspect of it too. Like, just there's just so much knowledge that was lost. Like, so I guess my next question would be, how do you think we, Like, say me as somebody who is just completely ignorant to all of it, like, how would we start going about finding out this, like how you, like, okay, let me ask you this. Let me put it this way. How do you do your research?
You know, my research is in, like, a few different buckets. I have done some different research in my own tribal community. One is, it went back to our creation story, and that the hemp rope is a part of the Nez Perce creation story.
Mm.
So I know that we have a since time immemorial connection with the fiber side of the plant. And then, you know, just, you know, I ask a lot of questions. I really feel like we have some gold mines in some of our communities that we may not necessarily understand how to utilize, but it goes back to what you said earlier of so much of what has been stolen from us. Sheesh. Some of that stuff's in museums overseas, you know, across the pond. Some of them are right here in our own backyard. And I have, we have what's called the Nez Perce National Historical Park site. So it's a Department of Interior controlled national park site but it is full of booty of all of our people, like of our ancestors. And so I have gone in there and done intensive research on the bags, the yarn bags. We have hemp rope yarn bags in our collections. We have pipes in our collections. So we have a lot of that record, you know, the physical evidence or record, and trying to connect that as much with the oral history. Our people used to also pass along a lot of those stories through the ropes. And in our parks, we have those ropes. And while I may not know how to read them or decipher them any more than I would be able to read like Braille, they still tell their own story. And most of these ropes are made out of hemp. And you read them through the knots and the different twists and turns. And I really see that if we can find ways to heal through the relics of our past that are still here with us present, and that's hard. I get it. Like, I've gone to the National Museum of American Indians back in Washington, D.C., and there's just something so sterile about museums, and they feel so at arm's length from us being able to use them. We really need to, but I just feel like, you know, that's, and I got a minor in the Nez Perce language, and I took it from a white linguist who just happened to be gifted in the Nez Perce language. And I would like, I feel like, you know, hitting my head up against a brick wall every day. But I realized, like, I just had to, like what we talked about earlier with, you know, overcoming the addiction and the urge, the temptation. I wanted to quit so bad so many times because I just felt like this, I don't know, really just, I was so averse to learning my language from a white man. I just thought this is just so wrong. And then I was like, no, I mean, like, Creator gave him the gift to be able to speak my language. And if I can learn it, you know, learn that part of it through him, work with my elders to actually learn how to pronounce it. But I really feel like we have to do the same thing with like museums, like just get past that to get to, you know, it's a means to an end to get where we really need to go. Treasures galore in our museums, and our people don't really go to them to learn.
Yeah, no, I've been to that same Smithsonian Museum, and then I think I was there for like 3 hours, and I wasn't like enough to like, I had to like kind of rush through the rest of it, but I was like reading every single thing, looking. I was just like, wow, 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 like going through every single floor. It was really good. I wish I could have, like, I need a whole day or more just to go through the whole thing. But I wanted you to kind of speak on, you know, like as you're doing your work, you know, you got the indigenous cannabis, talking more about that, and then like how you're able to help people. And just kind of talk about that piece.
So the Indigenous Cannabis Industry Association was just formed out of need of realizing, you know, that old adage, if you're not at the table, then you're on the menu. And when it comes to horticulture and agriculture and cannabis, we definitely do not want tribes to be at that disadvantage in a potentially multi-billion dollar emerging market. One, because we'll see what we had happen in 2014, what lit me on fire to go and work as an advocate for the plant, is that tribes not only get left out, but we are intentionally left out by organized efforts that realize that we still have land and they want it and they want to take it. So we still have it to steal. And and when it comes to, you know, this industry, there's a lot of bad actors, and there's tribes that have been run through the ringer already. They have paid very expensive prices as a entryway into cannabis, and they got burned. And those bad actors are moving from the West Coast to the Midwest to the East Coast, and they have this mindset that we are just, you know, communities ripe for the taking. And so the more organized that we can be to
She froze.
Dylan, you, it's the man.
conversations getting too powerful?
I bet.
Yeah.
Okay, so like I was saying, you know, it's really important for.
Oh my goodness.
That's okay. This, let's have the fun.
Yeah.
There we go.
There we are.
Okay.
Okay, you're on Bad Actors.
Sure?
Yep.
Okay. Sure? I just want to make sure. Okay. Yeah. So, it's really important to make sure that tribes are communicating with each other, because there are a lot of bad actors that are looking to capitalize on tribes not completely understanding how to set up regulated systems for the cannabis industry. But I think that that's still even a misnomer. Like, we do not want the cannabis industry starting off where the gaming industry left off, where partners and joint ventures from outside of our community come in with these crazy pie in the sky equity share agreements, and we're beholden to investors for 20 years, paying them out dividends that they are. We have people in all of our communities across the country that know how to do this. In every single tribal community I know of, I could name 10 of them in my own community where we don't need to hire anybody from California or Oregon. We got it. My bros got this. And so that's why I'm really happy to see some of the tribal communities that are creating their law and order codes and ordinances to where it is exclusive to tribal communities to benefit. They don't want anybody from the outside coming in and preying upon their communities. I think that the other, you know, part of the, you know, being organized and being able to talk to each other is there's something to be said about economies of scale. It is ridiculous to think that, you know, all of the tribes in Wisconsin all need testing facilities, all need cultivation sites, all need processing facilities, all need dispensaries. Like, not everybody needs everything in a fully vertically integrated system. Tribes in Nevada were able to model this out where, I mean, we got little tiny tribes in northern Nevada. They have water rights and they have land, but they are like, you blink and you're going to miss some kind of reservations where there's no economic tourism available for them to have a dispensary. Like, it just will not make money because they don't have the population. But can they grow it for the Las Vegas Paiute tribe, which is the first tribe in the nation to have a drive-through, the first tribe in the nation to have a consumption lounge? Not even first tribes, first facilities in the nation are owned and operated by tribes. So there's definitely that first part of it on a interstate, or I should say intra-tribal model, where tribes within one state are all working together. They are having conversations with sister tribes in other states, and that the nation-to-nation trade will open up a lot quicker for tribal communities in the years ahead, and it will happen before state.
So basically what you're saying is, like, it's all about good communication, positive communication with one another.
Oh, absolutely. That's one of the first things that we work in consulting with tribal communities, especially our tribal leaders, is, you know, they get really excited and they want to move forward with this cannabis operation. And one of the, you know, first best practices that we recommend to them is hold a community hearing, a forum, just allow a town hall opportunity for your community members to be heard, because you can guarantee that if you start this and you bring in people from the outside and then they hear about it, you know, they're not going to be too happy about it, even if they're in favor of it. Our communities want to and deserve to be consulted with, especially, I mean, if they can go all the way over to Washington, D.C. and meet with white congressmen, and they can go to the state capitals and meet with, you know, elected officials there, then damn right they should set up the time to meet with our tribal elders to explain to them why they're moving forward with this decision. And I think that that's one of the breakdowns that cannabis and hemp has really created an opportunity for tribes, especially our tribal leaders, because it's so unknown, it's so complex, it's still federally illegal, you know? So they are, some of them, moving more cautiously and optimistically forward, but it definitely makes most sense in communities where they have not already done a survey or polled the community to determine what that buy-in is, to just listen to them. Because, you know, the elders that are in opposition of it, let them just get it out and have their say, provide some education, and you'll find that you'll bring them to the other side, especially if you bring samples. No.
Bring those brownies.
No, that's funny. So from kind of give the timeline for, like, you know, say tribal entity reaches out to you. From that point until, you know, they're up and running, you know, they're supplying a dispensary, or they're supplying, you know, they're giving their hemp to out to, like, a factory to produce, like, shirts or backpacks or, you know, water bottles. What's that timeline?
You know, it's different for every single tribal community that we're working with, because there's definitely not a any kind of one-size-fits-all model. Okay. You know, the first step for the tribes, you know, in onboarding with us is, you know, to determine what their goals and their vision are. And some of them, they really are not quite sure. And through consulting with us, they realize that, oh man, they may be a stronger player in industrial fiber, and that they may not need to, you know, push the boundary with cannabis, that, you know, they have other options and alternatives. And, you know, cannabis is still very, very much something that we have, you know, tribes trying to figure out how they organize around in states like Wisconsin. And so now not only are we onboarding tribes, you know, we're working with collective groups, organized tribal organizations, you know, to move this conversation along. But, you know, we have tribes that have joined, you know, at very small levels, just to support the advocacy work that we do, saying, yeah, we like that you guys are a strong voice in Washington, D.C., and that the work that we're doing is actually to potentially prop up a standalone bill for tribal sovereign reform in cannabis. That, you know, I mean, if now what we know and realize politically what's happening in America is with elections and the toxicity of the Crips and Bloods gang wars of Congress that we are experiencing, that legislation is probably not going to happen for another 10 years. Like, realistically, we're not going to be having this conversation again for another 10 years. So, you know, what does that mean for tribal communities? Do we, you know, be bold, work together and push the envelope to create, you know, to explore uncharted territory? You know, do we stand behind all of these other organized groups and say, just give us safer banking? We just need banking reform, you know, and for our tribes, that the nation is kind of waiting. You know what Eastern Band of Cherokee did this weekend? You know, we were very supportive of tribes, you know, under self-determination, determining what that pathway looks like for them. And so Eastern Band of Cherokee on 420 opened up their medical dispensary preemptively ahead of the state of North Carolina. There's very, very few tribes that are brave enough to do that, because we usually, you know, get the end of the stick, you know, when we move forward in that manner. But our organization, what we ended up doing, and while the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians are not a member tribe of the ICIA, we understand the importance of solidarity in their movement. An attack on one of us is an attack on all of us, is, you know, the messaging that we're having with tribes to get them to work together in this united effort. So the Chippewa Federation, which is the sister Chippewa tribes of the Great Lakes region, wrote a resolution of support backing the Eastern Band of Cherokee tribes. And that was a resolution that was spearheaded by ICIA member tribes.
Wow. Wow. That's really cool. Bringing a lot of people to the table, unifying.
Stand up for your rights.
Yeah. Get up. Stand up. Hey. No, that's pretty cool. You guys got any thoughts, questions that you want to address?
I'm good.
No, I think that I think that's freaking fantastic, the way that you guys are working to unite the tribes in America. Because historically, we operate like, you know, the politicians.
Crabs in the bucket.
Like, yeah. And we don't want others to succeed. And I don't know why we're like that, but I want to thank you for shifting that paradigm.
I appreciate it. You know, who's been a big inspiration for me in this work as well, and he has been on board with us since the get-go, is Gary Farmer. Knows him as Uncle Philbert, but he is the official ambassador for the Indigenous Cannabis Industry Association, and he is an academic of the fiber side of the hemp plant. And he, you know, if you check out our website at www.indigenouscannabis.org, there is a landing page on there for the work that we're doing in collaboration with Gary, and that's to share the stories about what tribes are doing with industrial fiber. Because in my perspective of watching this from the 30,000 square foot view, is cannabis, whether it be adult use, recreational, or medicinal, that is the sprint. And if we're talking about, you know, an emerging multi-billion dollar industry as the sprint, well, then the marathon is industrial fiber. That's where we're talking about the just transition for Mother Earth and breaking away from the fossil fuel reliance on the plastics dependent nations. There's so many amazing benefits with the hemp plant. And so we, in collaboration with Gary Farmer's vision, started a fund development for a film called Hempire, and we seek to film 8 communities across India and country that are working on land remediation, housing solutions, like what they're doing at Lower Sioux Indian Community in Minnesota to build hemp homes. There's a lot of healing that's taking place, and we want these stories to be told from the Indigenous lens and viewpoint. So Gary is the founder and the director, one of the creative researchers on the project, and we have a dynamic team. It's all sweat equity at this point to pull it all together, but his vision is very strong, and so you can learn more about that film that we're working on, because that's really the future. The cannabis and the medicine, it is important, but when we talk about agricultural sovereignty and the work that we have to do to protect what we have left, that really is in agriculture, because right now there are millions of acres of land that are in tribal holdings that are being leased out to non-native farmers, and all of that economy is being exported globally. So like here on our reservation, $3.5 billion worth of exports from the Nez Perce reservation alone. My people are not benefiting from that. You can tell it from the cars we drive and the homes we live in.
That's crazy. No, I'm thankful for the work that you're doing, and seems very fruitful, and I mean, beneficial to our people. I mean, even just like creating jobs.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Hemp and cannabis are jobs for sure. And you know, I tease my family all the time because I have my own little tiny office here in the backyard, and everybody knows that I do the cannabis advocacy and I do all of this work. And I will come out with like a victory report every once in a while, and I will tease them, well, you guys think I'm just sitting in my little tiny office getting high all day playing video games?
Playing Halo?
Just sitting around watching SpongeBob?
Yeah, the stoner myth, we still have some to break through, but I am a very productive plant medicine advocate that is also a medicinal cannabis user. And I've had so many Native sisters and brothers say thank you for doing this work, because we need some normalcy around it. And for me, like, I like to do the fun stuff. Like when NCAI is going on, we host cannabis-friendly social mixers so that our tribal people have an alternative place to go to, that it's not just, you know, booze and, you know, those kind of things. And we hosted one in Las Vegas, and everybody had a blast. Just the opportunity to just go and have some cannabis-infused beverages and some smokables and edibles, and just hang out with people that are not looking to get trashed and woke up hungover and be productive the next morning.
Right on.
That is pretty awesome. And I just got to say, you know, your strength, your power, your determination, it's very, very admirable. You truly are a warrior among the people. And I want to thank you for all the work that you do.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Right on. Yes, ditto. So now you're off the hot seat. You got any questions for us?
Yes.
Here we go.
Here we go.
Well, I've been curious because I know that, like, I shared my my vulnerability of my first time ever using cannabis was in utero, and then I didn't share that my second time using it after that was, you know, under a guided experience with a family member. And so I was curious if each of you would, if you've had an experience with the plant, good, bad, ugly, share your first cannabis experience.
Okay, yeah, I'll go first because, like, I know it's not for me, like, personally. Like, I've tried it, like sober, and then I've tried it, like, drunk in my using days. And, like, oh, there she goes.
Keep going.
But, yeah, so, like, in those, wait, I'll wait till she comes back so she can hear it. She asked the question. Are you there? Okay.
I'm here.
Back. So, I didn't have any good experience with it. I didn't like it. Just made me, like, I smoked it, dozens of times, and then, like, I never vibed with it. Like, it never, like, made a connection where, like, it was cool. Like, I was chilling. It was always, like, anxiety through the roof, paranoid. I can't hear my heart beating, you know. That's where I went every single time. Or, like, if I was drunk and I smoked it, and I, you know, then I just got twisted, and then I just, like, puking, room spinning. Yeah. I haven't touched this stuff in forever, you know. I was like, all right. Yeah. And what I think I actually did, it was like a blessing in disguise, because I was like, if I can't handle weed, then I can't handle, like, the other kind of street drugs. So then I never tried any of the other street drugs. I was just like, all right, I'm just going to stick to booze. I mean, which is bad in itself, but I never dabbled with coke, meth, anything. So okay. it saved me in that way.
My first time, I remember, I think we were like, I was like fourth grade, third or fourth grade. My dad used to keep keep stuff in the house, and me and my older brother, who's 2 years older than me, I remember we went and stole some, and we went, I think I shared the story again, but we went into these chokecherry trees, and we were smoking in there, and man, all of a sudden, like, my dad just started crawling through, you know, the path, and yeah, we ended up getting whipped that time.
Oh, you were smoking bud?
Yeah.
I thought you were smoking cigarettes.
Well, cigarettes and bud.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, and then I became like one of those people that would never, like, I never saw myself quitting. I actually quit because I had to back in 2010 as part of my probationary sentence. And then, yeah, I've never picked it up since.
Okay.
I can't really remember, like, the first time. I know the first experience that's coming to mind is sitting around with some older people. And I was just a kid back then, too, like, probably about maybe 11, 10 or 11. And they were smoking out of a pop can, of all things. And so, you know, sitting in that group, you know, they didn't care, you know, they just passed it to whoever. And so I smoked with them, and I was okay. Like, I mean, I got really, really out of it. But I was okay until everybody went to bed, and I was still high, and I was laying on the couch, and it felt like I was sinking into the couch. And then as I was sinking, I could feel like, you know, like imagine if you were sinking into, like, Jell-O.
Yeah.
And then I could feel it oozing around my body. And then that sensation was kind of enveloped. And then I could feel it oozing up towards my neck. And then it started covering my face. And that's when I popped up and I freaked out. And I went outside and I was like, man, I got to get some air. I got to get some air. Like I felt like I was
hyperventilating.
Yeah, I felt. It was in my mind. Like, I was thinking about it.
Yeah.
And I could feel, like, that sensation, like, just being enveloped in, like, almost like Jell-O or something. Pudding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like quicksand or something. I don't know. But when I started, like, thinking about it, then, I could feel it coming up my chest, and now it's starting to cover my neck, and now it's starting to cover my face, and pretty soon I was like, it's so, like, and then I remember trying to use eye drops because I seen everybody else using Visine, and when I went and tilted my head back and used those eye drops, as soon as it hit my eyes, it felt like I was underwater, and I started like, like I couldn't breathe, like I was underwater. So I remember, like, I don't think that was my first time, but I remember that experience because it was just kind of, like, I quit for a while. I eventually picked it up later on in my teen years, but yeah, when I was a kid, that was one of my, I almost drowned in my zine.
Oh, and I appreciate you guys sharing that because I get asked that question quite a bit, you know, aside from, you know, the experience that I share, you know, with my mom. I think that the coming of age stories are really, they're fun. And I think there's a bigger connection that we all have from that story of our first.
Yeah.
All of our first.
Yeah, definitely. You got any more questions?
No, I mean, I could talk to you bros all night long. But I appreciate the opportunity to get to share, you know, with your listeners, and I appreciate the work that you all do. We have to keep working on repair and healing. It's just like, it's a part of our DNA. And so, you know, whatever path that we've gone on, if we could just keep getting back to that repair path, we're making our ancestors proud as we write our pages in our book.
Yes, definitely. And I just want to say thank you for what you're doing, and we appreciate you. You know, we're honored that you joined us tonight, and I know you got to run. So I just, you know, keep doing what you do and keep blessing the people.
All right.
Katia,
appreciate it.
I hope.
Appreciate you. Thanks for joining us. It's been an honor. MJ the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Later.
So she gone. Look, we can see ourselves.
Hi.
Hello. Doug.
Hey, that one over there is me.
Ooh, wait, can you bring my phone to me? Oh,
who's that cute one right there?
That one wearing the Biggie shirt. Randy's wearing a Notorious B.I.G. shirt. Looks like a kind of No Limit.
Does look No Limit.
Cash
a little bit,
Money
huh?
Records ish. Yeah. Oh, that's cool, man. I love those. We were all No Limit soldiers at one time.
Yeah.
Oh, that was good. Initial reflections are just kind of initial reactions to Mary Jane, her work, and just the interview in general.
Well, I got to be honest, man. I was kind of, I mean, I, on one level, on some level, I knew that, you know, how complicated that issue is.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I feel more educated now having listened to her.
Oh, for sure. Oh.
And she's pretty good at what she does. I mean, the way she explains things. So, like, I really appreciated that. And also the fact that, you know, advocating, you know, bringing people together.
Yeah.
And this is just one issue. Like, you know, there's several issues that we could probably speak of that, you know, those inner tribal relations should, you know, come together and start addressing.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, no, I think it was very informative. She really knows her stuff. And I was just impressed, like, just sitting back listening because I didn't really, I guess, understand that aspect of what she did.
Yeah.
But I think, like, the economic opportunities that, you know, uniting the different tribes, I think are going to be amazing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important work because the United States historically has kept minority people groups from prospering.
Oh, so.
And there's nothing different with what they're doing today.
Exactly.
You know, and there's a lot of things that they're doing, especially here in Montana, but I guess, like, I don't understand it to that extent.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm really thankful for that.
Yeah, I think the education piece was huge. Like, in our initial meeting with her, you know, about a couple months ago when we first started talking with her and stuff, and, like, she's like, yeah, every tribe has, like, their words and a relationship with the plant. And then I kind of got my wheels spinning, and then tonight again, I was just like, oh, man. And I started thinking about the word. You know, we have a word in our language, in the Crow language, Abzaloga language, and I was like, man, is that more recent? Did we just come up with that, or has that always been?
That's what I was wondering, you know, too.
So
yeah.
What came first, the chicken or the egg?
Yeah, so, like, what was our relationship with that, you know, and, like, you know, just wondering what that is. And just, like, the economic opportunity, because, like, our tribe, man, we got tons of acres, you know what I mean?
And yeah, like, and you don't necessarily have to get into cannabis, but even, like, the hemp side of things.
That's what I'm saying, like, the hemp side. Like, yeah. We start producing our own stuff, our own plastics, and we get that out there. Because there's, like, a whole generation that's all into that, you know, let's take care of Mother Earth, biodegradable materials and stuff, you know, the generation that's coming up behind us.
And what a perfect time, man, to jump on this opportunity because we're moving away from coal.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, like, it's been a dying industry, bro. Like, we're literally, we're like, done. The only people in the world that are trying to mine for coal. I'm exaggerating, but, you know.
They're done.
Yeah, I know they're done, but yeah, I mean, because there's nobody buying it.
Yeah, it's a wrap. Nobody will buy from us.
Yeah.
And she brought up another good point, too, is that, you know, there are indigenous landowners, but a lot of them lease their land out to non-natives
for pennies.
Yeah. So you get and they say, oh, well, we get this lease check, and they, you know, but there's one thing that I was told too is, like, you can keep that land, you don't have to lease it out, but you have to go out there and work it.
Oh yeah,
like, you have to put in that work, you have to put in that effort.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and then that's when you reap the benefits of it.
The full benefits, yeah.
But to have this idea that, oh, well, I'll just let somebody else make money off my land and I'll get
some royalties or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, a few cents on the dollar. But, and the thing with that is, too, is, like, if somebody leases your land, as soon as they sign that lease, you don't have any say over that.
Mm-hmm.
At all. You can't even, if they don't want you to step on that land, you can't even go over there. You can't drive across it. You can't do anything with it.
Mm-hmm.
If they, think of it this way. You got 5 acres of land, and I lease it from you, and I build a carnival, and I make millions off of it. All you're going to get is that lease check that we agreed on.
Oh, yeah.
But you ain't going to get no carnival money.
Yeah.
We need to start building our own carnivals.
Yeah. Circuses and carnivals and
I know we all got relatives that look like carnies.
And water.
Fit right in.
Even on a good day, you smell like a carny.
No, what would be like cabbage. Like, what would be awesome is if these tribes bought land outside of the city.
Oh, so.
Because you would slowly be taking over it, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, for real, it's taking your land back.
Yeah, bro, like, literally, bro, like, if we had the finances, right, like, to purchase land at the edge of the city.
Mm-hmm.
Because what do they call it, like, when they have to, like, is it annexed?
I don't know.
But, you know, like, at, man, I don't know, like, I think there's so many possibilities, and with as many tribes as we got here in Montana.
Let's run for chairman, then.
Man, I know, dog. If I wasn't a felon. If I wasn't a felon. Not chairman, but you know what I mean? Like,
okay, first we'll just change the Constitution so you can run.
Yeah. One of us will get in, change the Constitution.
I would never be. I would never be. Yeah, like.
It's the ultimate pulpit, man.
I know. No way, man.
No way.
The ultimate pulpit. You got the diaphragm for it.
No.
No. I'd right vote on. For you. I would go register to vote, and I would vote for you. I'd start voting.
Oh, man, make him vote. Make him vote.
Yeah.
Hey, let me get some horns. Let's change the mood, and I want to talk about something else real quick that's hot.
It's hot.
It's hot. Hey. Shout out to Mary Jane Oatman and the Indigenous Cannabis for what they're doing out there.
Yeah, this one's for you, MJ.
Hey! Oh, ho, 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 ho. All right, Karen, it's good to see you, my girl. Don't be acting fast with those res horses. So switch gears. NBA playoffs, man. You guys been watching, man. There's some awesome games out there.
Absolutely.
Oh, man, that, what was it, Denver and
Lakers?
Oh. I left. I was at my dad's, and I left, and I was like, eh, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
When they're down by 20?
Yeah, and then shoot, what's his face?
Murray?
Murray, yeah. hit that buzzer or that Jamal's. Game winner. Yeah.
Jamal.
But I get a kick out of my dad. I like watching basketball with him because he's like you. He doesn't like LeBron. Yeah. That guy's a crybaby. Barely brush him and he starts crying around. Oh, and he calls Kevin Durant cupcake.
Why's that?
You know what? I never did ask him, but listen, but like watching sports with him is fun because of his little comments.
Yeah, one-liners.
Yeah, he's a oh man, he cracks me up. But yeah, I was like, man, this guy, he's a LeBron hater.
Right on. I even vibe with your dad even more.
Yeah.
No, that Nuggets Lakers game, man. I was like, I called Billy down. He was in his room. I said, man, come watch this, man. Nuggets are making a comeback. He's like, oh, for real? And came down and watched that fourth quarter together. And I was like, man, Murray's going to come down and hit it. And right when he shot it, I said, game. I yelled it out. And then, boom, man, he hit it. We're jumping around. Ah! Like, we're there.
That's cool, man.
That's yeah. No, that was pretty cool. What about T-Wolves? What's their series? I haven't even been watched
2-0.
That. Oh, they're up 2-0. Okay, okay. Right on.
It's been really good, man. I think, like, with as much firepower as Phoenix has, it's been awesome to see Minnesota step up defensively,
Mm-hmm.
you know, and kind of keep them at bay.
Yeah, I seen Rudy Gobert. He was doing some good defense, man. Really good.
Man, he started out like 5 for 5, 6 for 6, hitting his free throws.
He turned it on.
Yeah. And then
you guys got Cat back, too.
Yeah, Cat came back. He hit like 8 straight out of the gate in the third quarter. Dang. He didn't really do too good in the first half, but, you know, the second half he came out on fire. And Edwards didn't have a good shooting game, but stepped up everywhere else. It's been it's been good, man. I feel like this is a good year.
That's one of those things where, like, when you see it on paper, you think the Phoenix, man, they would be
high-powered
offense. Yeah, but they seem pretty flat.
Yeah, and they are. They are a high-powered offense. You can't stop KD. Like, there's no answer for him. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And then you got Bradley Beal or, like, Devin Booker. Like, at any point in the game, they can take over. But, man, it's been amazing to see Minnesota. Like, man, what did Ant say? They told him, well, they got KD. We got Jaden McDaniels, who's a defensive stalwart. And, man, he's only 22.
Right on.
23 years old. Ant's 22. We got a great future, and they're talking about, like, how Tim Connolly built that team to defeat the Nuggets. So we'll see.
Oh, we'll see, man.
Yeah, we'll see, man.
No, I seriously think that whoever's coming out the West is going to win it.
Yep.
I mean, I don't see anybody in the East beating anybody in the West.
Absolutely. I think it's coming from the West. But
the Celtics lost to Miami.
last night.
Okay, so here's a stat for you, and I don't know the exact numbers, but – I heard it on ESPN, and they said Miami made like 38 baskets. Like they made, that's how many they made, and like 27 or 28 of them were threes.
Dang.
Wow!
So there's like 10 baskets that they were 2-pointers.
Live by the three, die by the three.
That's right. That's right. I love to see that ball when the three's dropping, though.
Yeah. Anybody watched them? Or it's tonight, I think. The Magic and who are they playing?
Oh, who are they? The 70s, not 76ers. Who is the Magic playing? Pacers? Pacers.
No.
Who the heck is?
Indiana's playing Miami.
Is it Milwaukee against the Magic?
No.
Who's Milwaukee playing?
I think they're playing Indiana.
Okay. Who is Magic playing?
Magic are playing like the Sixers or somebody. No.
No, it's Knicks and the Sixers.
Oh, man. Who is it?
Man, Magic got a young squad, though, man. Got a bunch of ballers.
That's what I was going to say was, like, I wanted to watch, how do you say his name? Paolo Banchero?
Yeah, Banchero, yeah.
Paolo Ranchero.
How tall is he?
Cavaliers.
Yeah, he's about 6'9".
Yeah, because last night when it came on, it showed the schedule for tonight's games. I'm like, man, nobody wanted to watch the Cavs and the Magic.
So, I know, so check this out.
Yeah.
It's 17 seconds to go. Oh, it's final now. 121-83.
Oh, wow. Who won?
Magic. Magic.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah, but I'm hearing good things about that cat.
Yeah, no, he's a baller for sure.
They said there's nothing that he can't do outstanding.
Yeah, no, he's just like straight up like beats.
Like, who one of those famous coaches is saying like he's probably one of the top positionless basketball players.
Oh, yeah. He can handle the rock. He can go coast to coast. He can bust the threes. Yeah. I mean, he's just like, well, he's like about 21, 22.
Damn.
20? I think. I don't know. He's pretty young.
Man, the league is in good hands, man. I really enjoy this, man. I there are some things that I don't enjoy, but I really enjoy the...
Like you don't enjoy March Madness.
No, not like that, but like, you know, like the calls and...
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah.
You know, the softness of the league, I think, like, yeah. Yeah.
Right on, but right on.
There's some
on,
things
right
that, yeah, just make me want to...
Yeah, I'm going to go home. I'm going to go get some food and go watch the Nuggets with the Lakers tonight. 8 p.m.
Yep, it's a late night.
Yeah, I'll be up watching that one. Any closing words, any closing thoughts, gentlemen?
Not really.
I think that's a wrap.
Right on. Well, I appreciate you, Pod Gotti and Favorite Inning, for bringing it, as always. Yeah, man, I'm very honored that Mary Jane joined us, you know. It's cool, man.
Very educational.
You know, that it humbles me, you know, that people think highly of us and want to come on the podcast, you know, like everybody have been asking, like, oh, yeah, I want to be on the podcast, yeah, you know, and they, like, barely even know us,
yeah,
you know, so that's cool, and that's humbling for me, and it's
183 great episodes, they know us.
Oh, yeah, for sure. We don't know them. Everybody knows us. Yeah. I'll just play. All right, cool, man. With that, we'll end this episode. And to all our listeners underneath the firmament, we love you. We appreciate you. And to our firmament, unspoken words disciples, keep spreading unspoken words gospel, Billy Graham style.
Hey, be kind to yourselves.
Let's go, Nuggets.
These unspoken words I'm trying to get out my head. Plug in the mic and leave nothing unsaid. Now sit back, relax, and listen to some real talk.
Now sit back, relax, and listen to some real talk.
You are now listening to Unspoken Words Podcast.